It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham and Jeff Jarvis are here. So much to talk about. Elon Musk's plan to put internet everywhere by launching 4,000 satellites. He's actually filed for permits to do it. We'll talk about that. What's up with Google, Facebook, Medium, all of that and more. This Week in Google is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 392, recorded Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. Buried in the common area. This Week in Google is brought to you by Segment, the leading unified customer data platform. Segment collects data across your websites, mobile apps, and cloud platforms and delivers it to over 170 third-party tools and apps. Get 3 months free on the Segment team plan when you sign up at segment.com/twit. And by Betterment, a smart, easy-to-use, and less expensive way to invest for your financial future. Get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more at betterment.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in General Stuff. Our
I was waiting for that.
It used to be Google, but now it's anything we want to talk about. Stacey Higginbotham is here from Stacey on IoT. I have a lot of questions for you. IoT has been big in the news this week. And you're always
have answers.
Yeah, you're always keeping up on what's going on with these little devices we're hooking up in our house. I'll ask you a question in a second. But let me introduce Jeff Jarvis, who's also here from the City University of New York, taking a snow day.
Yes. So we got a very thoughtful letter about the show, that someone who complained that we've gotten too far away from Google. I meant to respond to him. I forgot, whoever it is, if you're watching. I think it was very thoughtful and smart.
We were never all about Google.
There's probably kind of some measure of Google we could come back to, but that's fine.
We were, even in the earliest days, it was about Google and the cloud. And notice our logo is a puffy little cloud.
And I think we have to include, I think it's platforms.
Which meant Google, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yes.
So, but I didn't want to do a social media show. We actually had a social media show.
You tried that, and it oddly didn't. There wasn't what was to say about Facebook in and of itself. Yeah,
I think that I prefer what we do, which is the impact of Google, Facebook, and Twitter on real life, and I think we pretty much stick to that. There's been a little politics leaking in, but you know what? I defy you to walk down the street, any street in America, and not have a little politics sneak in.
You know, the New York Times I was on the homepage and they said 13 stories that have nothing to do with politics. And I was like, oh, click.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think that's not unusual. A lot of people, including my wife, are saying, can we do, you know, let's just take a break from all the politics. But if you look at, you could do that. But if you look at the top stories on the New York Times, they're all about politics. Because people do want to read this stuff. This is not a show about politics, but it's inevitably going to leak in a little bit. Because there is a nexus of politics and tech, but B, because we're human. And we're going to talk about the things that are on our top of our mind. But let me ask you, Stacey, about, it was on Valentine's Day, and I left the room briefly, and I came back to my wife yelling, saying, can we get a GD television system that I can use? I can't. I just want to watch Netflix. How?
Wow.
So, this is a challenge because I have a fairly complex home theater system, several of them. My man cave's worse. The one in the living room is a little more straightforward, but it has an AV receiver. It has Netflix. It has an Apple TV. It has a Blu-ray player / PlayStation. It has and a television set. And it's kind of complicated. And you have to know, well, Netflix is on the Roku, so you go to the Roku for that. Or you go to the Apple TV for that. You could watch Netflix on the Panasonic television, but it's not as good. You know, that kind of thing. So I finally, and tell me if I made a mistake, I said, all right, give up. I'm buying a Harmony hub.
Oh, I just bought one yesterday. It's coming tomorrow.
God, we're just like in sync, aren't we?
It's a little spooky.
Pretty soon I'm going to start menstruating at the same time. No, I'm kidding. Joking. Cut that out.
Wrong kind of sink.
The still that's there, both of us going like this.
And me going, ah.
Okay.
No, but do you think, now I've had before Harmony ones, I've had a variety of Harmony remotes, and it never really worked well for me. So tell me about the hub, because you could do it with the Echo, right?
Yes. Okay. So I tried the hub when it first came out. That was like 2 years ago, and I brought it in, and it was awesome for AV because you can do the complicated stuff like set time delays, which may or may not matter for you, but like my receiver takes a second to be like, hold on a second.
No, it does. All of them do, because they have to handshake and all that.
I got the boot and handshake I don't even know what's happening. Yeah. So it was great for that. So the reason I bought it is because now because I'm so incredibly lazy, I want to say, Echo, turn on my Netflix.
Well, that's what I want Lisa to be able to do. She should be able to say, Echo, watch Netflix in the living room.
So that is what I think is going to happen. So I've got to set that up. Talk to me next week because it comes tomorrow.
Mine comes
Friday.
Because
that's what I'm saying. There you go.
We'll compare notes.
We could be like, did it work? Because I didn't buy the remote.
And you've seen this one. This is Kaavo's.
That's beautiful, but yeah, so wood. Expensive. Yeah.
The nice thing about the Harmony Hub is it's not expensive. It's like $100, right?
Yeah, it's $100. If you get the remote, it's more expensive.
But the idea is I don't want the remote because you use your smartphone, right?
Well, I'm going to use the Echo. We'll see what happens. Again, this is why I bought it, because I'm like, by golly, it's too good not to buy.
Dr. Mom has one. She says, that's how I do it. You should also have a tablet around for things like volume control. Because you can't, do that by voice commands. But that's what, and Dr. Mom's, one of the reasons I got it is because of you, Dr. Mom. You're always saying, I could talk to my TV and mama. That would be nice.
Oh, I thought you could do the Echo thing with volume.
Maybe you can. I don't know.
No, well, yeah.
She says keep a tablet around so you can. Well, I'll just leave a tablet, on the living room there. That's actually, and I'm going to show this a little later on, but that would be, I almost always have a laptop in front of the TV anyway. Especially if I'm watching like the Grammys or the Oscars or something where it's
live. If you leave it in another room and then you can't do anything unless you go get it, that's going to be.
No, that's why I'm going to dedicate.
Yell at you for that.
I'm going to dedicate this Chromebook because it's a tablet as well, an Android tablet, and this will be a wonderful living room.
My wife would hate that being out all the time.
I guess that's a no.
Your wife has no choice, and your husband no choice.
Know what I would probably like to do. I want something, here's the dream scenario. It's too expensive right now, but I want an old phone that has inductive charging on it so I can just put it in a nice little container on a side table. Because otherwise the phone is going to constantly need charging. And that's
a good idea.
That's a really good point.
I have that. I always have leftover stuff. I could do that too.
Does it have inductive charging? Because that's the key is not having to plug in your freaking remote.
No, and let me show you the inductive charger you should get. The Tilt.
Tell me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have a couple, and I really love them. It's the Qi wireless charging. This is TYLT.com is the company, and they make a cradle. Where is it?
Oh, that's pretty. It's right there.
You see it?
Is that it? This thing right here?
Well, let me click. Yeah, this is it right here.
Oh.
VU umlaut, $30. And so you just put your phone on that. And the nice thing about it is it's kind of naturally positioned. Comes in a variety of colors to fit your decor. As long as
not
your decor
orange.
Is orange, like, green, or bright blue. I really like this. It works really well. And you just, the phone will just sit there. You have to have a wireless phone, obviously, wireless charging phone, obviously.
Right. So I'm now going to be paying, let's say, $100 for the Logitech Harmony, $30 for the charger. I've got an old phone that may, or I may have to buy a little charging case. We'll call that $30. So now I'm $160 so I can talk to my TV.
It's worth it.
Oh, I'm such a loser.
No, this is your, hey, little hint for you. It's all tax deductible. So the good news is the taxpayers help foot the bill.
Oh, I feel much better now.
It's your business, Stacey on IoT. They're,
I know. I mean, I will put it on my business account, but I'm like, oh, this may be silly. I'm fully acknowledging that it may be silly.
Well, what's really odd is we both did it within 24 hours of one another. But it was Valentine's Day that did it for me, and just the pain, and I felt really bad. Because
you should feel really bad.
I wrote up a manual. It's like 8 pages. And that's the simple. By the way, that's the simple one. Go in my office. You know, I'm the only one who knows how to do that.
Does it make you feel powerful?
No, it makes me frustrated. I don't like. And the worst thing is nowadays TVs, because of this thing called CEC, every device as it wakes up and says hello takes over the TV. So I have to sit and wait while the TV goes, what? Oh, you want to talk? Wait a minute. No, you want to talk? Oh, you want to talk? And I can overrule it. Doesn't matter. I just have to wait till it goes through devices. And then so 30 seconds later, I could say, okay, go back to the TV now. It's terrible. This has to be a universal problem, or nearly universal.
Yes. Like complicated TV setups?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I remember like 15 years ago when I was going over to people's houses to babysit their kids, and they would be like, and here, this is how you work the television. And they would hand me the instruction manual. And that was just because they had multiple receivers and game consoles.
They were fancy people, and they were ahead of the times. So moving on to stuff other people care about. Let me mention another thing I bought that I'm going to say don't buy whatever you do. The Android 2.0 watch, the LG Sport.
Ooh. Is this the fancy one or the less fancy one? LTE or no?
Yeah, I got the one with LTE, but Florence Ion got the Style, and that's the simpler one and much more attractive and frankly, the only one, you know, that's at all comfortable. The Sport.
So it's wearing a pancake?
Oh, first of all, it was worse than that, Jeff, because it's thick, because it has GPS and LTE in it.
It's going to give you wrist cancer for all that.
Who knows? My Sport has its own phone number, so I can not only receive calls, I can place calls. But here's one good thing that the Apple Watch can't do that it can do. It can also stream Google Music. So you don't have to have music on the watch. You can listen to your Google stations via LTE. You'll pay for all of this, of course. If you have AT&T, you can share it with your phones. So you don't have to pay for another account phone number.
But you pay $10 a month for it?
I think not, because you're using the same phone number as your phone. So there's a sync thing, but I pay $10 a month because I have a dedicated phone number for it.
Ridiculous. I just don't see that.
GPS, heart rate monitor that's not as great as the Apple Watch or a Fitbit. It's kind of okay. But the worst thing is the antennas, it's ugly as sin. It's slate gray, and the band is it cannot be removed because the antennas are in the band going about halfway down your wrist. It means that part is inflexible. You kind of see it when you look at that picture right there, that bump. It's kind of an odd curve. That's fixed. It's a hard, solid antenna up and down, bottom and top and bottom. And so it's just not comfortable. It doesn't conform to the wrist very well.
Now, what about the Sport?
Sport. What about the Style's fine, but it loses the LTE. It loses the GPS.
Which is fine. I don't want any of that.
Well,
you know what I did today?
What? What are you wearing?
I got a new battery in my plain old watch.
Good for you.
You know what?
Frankly, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. I'm not a big fan of smartwatches. I like regular wristwatches a lot.
The problem is it's a social problem. I did like not having to pull out the phone and see an alert or whatever, but I looked like I was rude every time I did. You're tired of talking to me. You're looking at your watch. No, I'm checking a message.
That is also rude. If you're in the middle of a conversation with someone.
Well, that's to hell with that.
But not only that, but I find I end up pulling out the phone anyway. I look at the watch. I say, oh, there's a message. Oh, let me get the phone. It's like, yeah, it's double the worse. It's worse.
I only like it because my phone's usually in my purse or my bag. So I like I don't actually want to see the message necessarily, but I like knowing that a certain type of message came in.
Yeah.
So that's practical.
Yeah.
But that's the only, and I have a ring for that. So pa-fa. Pa-fa.
Fa-fa. Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa.
I do miss having a watch.
Do you?
I just stopped wearing various fitness trackers. I may get a charge, but they weren't doing anything for me.
I do like fitness trackers mostly because it gives me some peer pressure, and that's where Apple Watch excels, because you share, you get your rings, you see, you kind of graphically quickly how you're doing, and then you see how your friends are doing. And like Rene Ritchie now sends donuts when you complete a workout, because he's Canadian. And
like Tim Horton donuts?
They look like Tim Hortons. You can't eat them unless you'd have to eat your watch. They're on your watch.
That's the most depressing kind of donut ever.
It makes you want a donut, but you can't have it. I find that makes me want to work out.
Okay.
You're not that way, though.
No, I'm so contrary. Any gamification efforts just piss me off. I'm like, ugh.
That's why you don't have a boss.
Probably.
Yeah.
No,
this is why I started my business. I didn't want anyone to tell me what to do. Because some people, and I think you're like this, somebody tells you to do something, you do the other thing. You do the opposite, right?
That is how I got a tongue ring.
That took my breath away. Your mother said, Stacy, do not get a tongue ring.
No, my boyfriend's soon-to-be husband at the time was like, you're not going to do that. And I was like, oh.
Don't you tell me what to do. I'm not your host.
Wait. Your boyfriend's soon-to-be husband at the time.
Yes. I don't have one now. I took it out. This was when I was younger.
You took your husband out?
No.
Is he buried in that backyard?
He's buried in the common area.
No, she kept Andrew. But she got rid of the tongue ring. That's one advantage of piercings, though, is you could take them out and things kind of mostly grow back.
They do.
Now we really have gone afar from Google.
Do you have a numb spot in the tongue?
Nope.
Did you? But when you first got it, you talked like this, didn't you? Come on, tell the truth.
There was like 3 days of, yeah.
Oh, it's a terrible thing to do. It's very risky, too.
Yeah.
But did you get a stud or a ring?
A stud. It's in the middle of your tongue.
Yeah,
a ring,
it's a stud.
Really?
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. But let's have, hey, you know what? Google laid off a bunch of people.
You should have listened to Andrew.
Division.
That's all I'm saying.
No.
And he still married you after that, huh?
What can I say?
He's a smart man. All right. Google laid off people. What? No, that's not true. Is it?
Oh. They reallocated people because they have a new CEO in their fiber division.
Oh, the fiber.
Is this part of the rundown? I should have looked at the rundown more closely.
No, bring it up. Go ahead. It's depressing because I'm surprised they're even doing it. But
well, they're here. I've got too many tabs.
They're doing more fiber. We talked about this on Sunday because one of our panelists, Jason Heiner, lives in Louisville, which was upgraded from a potential to an upcoming. And we had thought that fiber was like frozen.
But it's not. Well, they're doubling down on wires. So let me, as I scroll to find the story, have you found the story yet? Because I'm sucking. Google fiber. I started looking up Logitech Harmony stuff instead. Okay, names new boss, shed staff. USA Today. Was Craig Barrett
left.
Yeah, he left. Now they have a guy named
that
Gregory.
That was last October.
It was, and they had nobody kind of in charge at the time. But now they've got Gregory McCray, who I don't know who he is. I'm looking. But they have, let's see, la, 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 la.
They're going up against AT&T in the cities where AT&T says they're going to roll out fiber. Google has started to roll it out. But
yes.
I think a lot of this, Jason called it fiber to the press release instead of fiber to the curb, right?
It's fiber to the premise, but yeah.
Well, no, not premise.
No,
press release.
Well,
it's
yes,
all
yes.
about appearances and less about anything else.
Well, that's what I called AT&T's efforts originally.
Yeah.
But, well, not their first ones, which were in Austin, because those are actually happening. But a lot of their other cities that they announced are not getting anything right now.
McCray came from Aero Communications.
Greg.
Yeah. Gregory McCray came from Aero Communications. That's not the Aero that was doing the local antenna Aero, is it? Maybe it is.
That was Aereo.
Okay. And Google's also losing hundreds of employees, moving them to other positions. There won't be any layoffs, so they'll be reabsorbed into the Google.
Now, this says Aereo Communications, which was the
it was Aereo. Okay, yeah. So maybe Business Insider spelled it wrong. Steve Kovac.
Well, that's a real good question, because USA Today has it Aereo Communications, but there is also an Aero
LinkedIn career.
Well, there's Greg McCray, who is the with the Boston Celtics. That's not him. industry.
Let me go to Bloomberg story, because Mark Bergen's usually really good. Yeah. Gregory McCray.
He is.
He spelled it correctly. Aero Communications.
Aero. So it's not Aereo. That's a different
thing. It's not Aereo.
Yeah. No, according
to USA Today.
Sorry, USA Today. He was the CEO of Aero Communications, CEO of Acal Energy, Antenova Limited, Piping Hot Networks. and he is on the board of directors at InfoGPS, a leading provider of cybersecurity and compliance management. I don't know. This just sounds like some guy. I don't know.
Some guy who's got experience in telecom. Now, it says several hundred employees are moving over to Alphabet's main Google business, according to a person familiar with the situation.
So the real question here is, how committed is Google to fiber? We thought they weren't because of all the transitions and layoffs. And yet they announced this week that they're going to move into Louisville. And then they've hired a new CEO. So what is going on?
So, well, when they bought Webpass, I thought that was going to be their way of doing fixed mobile wireless.
Yeah.
Yes, but you could do it. You could also do it in commercial settings where Google Fiber actually might be better off. And it's a lot cheaper than laying actual fiber in the ground.
Right.
So that's what I thought would end up happening. Because it's just a better market strategy. Consumers are stuck with contracts. Most consumers are like, what am I going to do with a gig? I'll just stick with AT&T. It's fine. So
it's a little pricey. I think that the AT&T gigabit is $80.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's not pricey compared to cable, but our provider here, SonicNet, charges $40 for gigabit.
Yeah, that's because Dane is a good guy who's not trying to screw his customers over.
And Google is?
Well, Google
charges $40 too, as I remember, at $40 as well, right?
I think they launched fiber, I think it was like $75 in...
But you got TV with that.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
And AT&T and Comcast and all those guys, all they're trying to do is keep you at a $150 ARPU, you know?
Right. Well, that's the strategy. As they see people moving away from premium cable subscriptions to over the top, they increase the cost of internet so that they don't lose their ARPU.
Mm-hmm.
What is ARPU?
Average revenue per annual revenue per user. Average annual revenue per user.
Either.
Average.
Either counts.
Because it's annualized, but averaged.
Yeah.
Yes.
AT&T, meanwhile, is lighting up gigabit in 5 new metros, they say.
For realsies?
Well, is it fiber to the press release? This is apparently a requirement because of the DirecTV merger.
Mm.
It's bringing fiber to the home internet to 5 new metro areas, boosting its fiber totals to 51 areas. Milwaukee, Columbia, South Carolina, Jackson, Mississippi, Knoxville, Tennessee, and Shreveport, Louisiana. AT&T fiber is available too. Now do the math here. It's in 51 metros, available to 4 million homes. That's not a lot of people.
Yeah, that's nothing.
It's not that a lot of people.
That is a very small footprint.
Yeah.
So, okay. That makes
these
sense.
Are all, yeah, are these AT&T's all overbuilds, or are they in their own markets?
Just the fiber. It's in their markets. They're not markets, going to like Verizon.
So they're going into small chunks of their markets, probably redlining fiber.
They're probably doing it in places that they've got good, they've got dense, not
well,
inner cities.
You're right.
What is the word?
Of the 4 million potential customer locations, 650,000 are apartments and condo units.
Yeah.
They charge $70 to $90 a month, depending on the city. It's usually lower if Google's there already. About 30% of fiber to the home subscribers have selected the gigabit tier. Most of them are doing less. It's interesting.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
again, most people are like, gigabit. A gig? What do I need that for?
You don't. 100 megabits is enough, should be enough for everyone, right?
150.
All right, 150.
Depends on how many people. I mean, think about 4K, how many people.
Yeah.
I've had my Fios for so many years now. I've never upgraded anything in it.
What are your Fios speeds?
50.
Even that seems like if it's a solid 50, some of it's just how reliable it is.
This we've been pretty good. I don't want to jinx this lately with this.
No, right? I love your fiber. But were you were an early Fios?
Very early Fios. One was coming to my market. Yeah, and I love. I mean, as much as I complain about Verizon Mobile, I love Verizon Fios.
Yeah,
love.
Yeah, a lot of people like. Kevin Toefel has Fios a lot. Like the people who have Fios love it. Too bad Verizon's not pushing that out more places.
All right, let's take a little break. We'll come back with more. Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT and the IoTpodcast.com. Mr. Jeffrey Jarvis from the City University of New York. And of course, his blog, buzzmachine.com. I want to ask you, you're still publishing on Medium, right?
Yeah, I'm just not publishing much lately. I've been a bad boy.
I'm curious what's going on with Medium. Do you know? Maybe you
don't know
yet. Site we could talk. Mm-hmm. Our show today brought to you by a brand new sponsor. And this would be of interest to anybody who has customers, who has, say, a website or a mobile app or a cloud platform, and wants to get the data from your customer visits in a way that you can use it. Now, usually what we do and what we've done in the past on our website is you put a line of JavaScript in for Google Analytics or Optimizely or Chartbeater, all the different things that you might want to use to keep an eye on your site. And that's a lot to maintain. It's a lot of integration. It's a lot of engineering time. Segment makes this so much easier. You put in one simple integration and think of it as plumbing for your customer data. And then you go to the segment, you put in the segment, the line of code in your web page or your app or whatever. Then the segment dashboard on the web, you can say, and route this to analytics, route this to Optimizely, route this. It supports hundreds of integrations. You don't have to write any custom code. It simplifies everything. A single API for unifying all your data, performing analytics on any platform. MailChimp, Market2, Atlassian uses it, Intuit uses it, New Relic uses it, Reuters use it. You could choose from all the most popular partner integrations, the most popular apps for advertising. Yes, it works with AdSense and Overture for analytics, for A/B testing, for attribution. That's just the A's. With Segment, a developer can quickly integrate a new analytics tool for the data-driven account manager, another for the app-happy marketer, another for the data scientist who needs the flexibility of a unified data warehouse. Yeah, they do that too. And if one of your analytics goes down, doesn't matter. Segment will continue to collect the data till it's back up and then pipe it over. You can also dig deeper by bringing data in from any source, by importing historical data, by customizing what ends up in your data warehouse of choice. Spend your time using your analytics data, acting on it, understanding it, not struggling to get all your integrations working. Thanks to Segment, your CEO will love your quickly deployed integrations, tools like Zendesk and Intercom and AppNexus. I'm just throwing in, I mean, if you go to the website, Segment, SEGMENT.com/twit, you'll see a long list of things you can integrate. Think of it really, plumbing is the best example. You're coming in, your customers are interacting with you in a variety of different ways. You use Segment to get that, to store and forward that customer data to the appropriate integrations. making it very easy for you to do the analytics you need to do. It's so much simpler with their API. Over 8,000 of the world's best companies use Segment to drive growth and revenue, and now Twit listeners can try the Segment team plan free for 3 months when you sign up at segment.com/twit. Segment.com/twit. We all want to understand our customers better, serve them better, and Segment makes it easier for you. It could actually save you money. Certainly it'll save you hours and hours of engineering time. Segment.com/twit. This week in general topics of our interest, or Twig. Yeah, he took away the Google. He took down the Google logo. No, put it back up. So Jeff, Ev Williams said a couple of weeks ago that he wanted to rejigger Medium and was going to try to find a new form of monetization. He's made kind of hints that they were going to do a paywall or some sort of subscription. You write a lot at Medium. In fact, I always yelled at you for doing that. I said you should, you know, own your own content. Don't put it on somebody else's platform.
Yeah, but the Medium added the value of the social edition.
Absolutely.
I get more value there. So I put it on Huffington Post.
I read a ton of stuff on Medium. And yeah, it looks good. It's easy to write, but he hasn't given you. I mean, you must be one of...
No. Well, I introduced him to somebody for something else and because they wanted to talk to him about membership. And he, you know, happy to talk to that person and said, yeah, you know, when I'm ready, we should talk. That's the last I heard. The best suggestion I heard, somebody on Twitter said he should buy Patreon.
I had actually heard a rumor to that effect. You know what I found out? I didn't realize that Patreon's patron, their big VC firm, is Thrive.
Right.
Which is Jared Kushner's brothers.
Which is also Slack. They're a big investor in Slack as well.
I don't know. I don't know if there's any connection to be made from that, but I found
no. Somebody I know. I'll let her stay anonymous on Facebook. Somebody we both know. Kind of said, what do we think about this?
Yeah,
and I've met and dealt with both brothers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I said, not huge length, but I've dealt with them both.
Well, sure.
That makes Josh sense. Is a very nice guy, very smart, and I kind of thought, well, you know, Billy Carter didn't make us think differently about Jimmy
That's
Carter,
true.
And
That's true.
What's his name? Hugh Rodham didn't make us think differently about Hillary, though God knows somebody does. So I suppose that we shouldn't be condemned by our degrees of separation.
Yeah.
Unless and until we hear a connection, and then all bets are off for me. It don't have to be from anybody else, but for me. But right now, I think that he's associated with so many people I do respect.
Yes. I agree with you.
And just did another investment in something recently. And I thought, okay, if knowing all they know, they took another investment from.
Well,
and
they
okay.
created Oscar, which was a sponsor here. And I think
Oscar's going to be hurt by the death of.
Right. It's an Obamacare, essentially. Obamacare
Josh Miller. Do you remember Josh Miller who did. He just went to Thrive, I think.
Oh, interesting.
As an associate. So, you know, I decided the benefit of the doubt was it called for.
So no hint on what was, because I want to see Medium succeed. It is
too.
A little bit like Blogger at this point, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like a fancy Blogger.
Without any social stuff still matters.
Yeah.
You mean in what way?
I love, in just the sense that that's where people are now are making it their blog almost. This is they write.
Yeah.
This is where they publish.
Yeah. I think it's too bad that he just gave up on advertising. I think there's still a lot of room to fix advertising, rethink advertising fundamentally what it is. I don't think we can afford in media to give up on advertising.
Ev's pockets are deep enough that he could run for a little while on the gas in the tank. Right? Yeah. He doesn't have to.
But the other thing, I mean, if it became a paywall thing, I don't want that. I'm writing to brainwash
people. Don't need that. You want to reach a large number of people. You're not trying to make money.
That's the value.
Yeah.
And if it shrinks because there's a paywall or a meter or whatever the hell you want to call it, that's not great. There's contributions to people. That's fine. But I don't believe that's going to add up to a hell of a lot.
Yeah.
There's way plenty of content in the world. You know, more blathering is not worth paying for. Everybody thinks their stuff is worth paying for. I should be paid for this. Sorry. No, probably not.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
By the way, I
haven't gone to Medium's front page in a while, but just like every social network at this point, while there's a great variety of stuff on Medium, the front page is pretty much consumed by politics already. Just like everywhere else. Like, you can't get away from it, can you?
You know, but I don't think a lot of people go to Medium's front page. I tend to find Medium stuff either on Twitter or I have like a interest digest that they send me an email to, kind of like Nuzzle.
I have to say, though, of all the sites, I agree. I understand. I mean, nobody goes to anybody's front page anymore. But Medium is, I kind of do. And like, I'll go to Back Channel, which is a front page mm-hmm. within Medium. I like the editor's picks. I mean, once you get deep past the front page into some of the like top stories or the categories, there's a lot of good stuff. I find it very interesting. And I think in a way I see, you know, where do we, you know, we have beat checks, right? We go every morning. I'm sure you do this. I do this. I go to Tech Meme and if we're, you know, Feedly, mm-hmm. Nuzzle, still Twitter and Facebook and Google Plus. Yes, Google Plus. Looking for stories that we want to talk about for the day. Medium's another one that is a good choice. I like Hacker News. So I still do go to some front pages. Some of them are aggregators, but Medium's an aggregator now, isn't it?
It's still an authoring tool.
It's all on Medium, but there's such a variety there. I feel like it's maybe not. It seems, you know what? It's
Platter sure is
you bad. Know what? It's like the best social networks in the early days. Before everybody else arrives, we're just the smart people are there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think two things. One, I think this whole notion of
you think content. That's elitist, don't you, Stacey? I see her.
I'm like, oh, you guys are so.
I see that.
You're right.
But come on, Stacey, you can admit it.
Well, I stopped publishing on Medium, so.
Oh, why?
I don't know. I publish stuff on Medium because it helped drive traffic, I think, to the newsletter. But I still have a bunch of followers there. But once I started putting my stuff on my own site, I was kind of like, I may still do stuff. But I mean, people would just send me emails and they'd be like, hey, can I take your pub for my pub? And yeah. I never saw a way to monetize it. And
I feel fairly strongly that stuff should originate on your site. If you want to syndicate it elsewhere, that's fine. But you gotta own.
Yeah, well, I need to be better at just cross posting on the blog and on Medium. It just takes another step. I used to cross post on Huffington Post all the time too, and I stopped that.
Yeah,
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask your opinion on cross posting because I'm just kind of like, you know, how much of my stuff do people want to see? And if you see it in a bunch of different places, you're going to be like, God, Stacey, thirsty much? So,
that's another. Well, I haven't looked at. You don't want to get over. You say, is this the overexposed problem?
Yeah, or I mean, but it's also the same content. I mean, like, because I repost my newsletter stuff, and I'm fine because a lot of people don't get that. But I
think you should just appear here once a week and nothing else.
Nothing else. Then I'd be totally irrelevant after a while. not in a mean way. Just like I wouldn't have any expertise.
Well,
on
that's
anything.
The fear. Like, but that is kind of the fear, right? Oh, I see. You get your expertise because you have to post in a variety of platforms.
I have to actually produce like work that is more than just the work I do.
This
here.
Is too easy. In other words,
well, this feels kind of punditry-ish.
Yeah,
I'll be honest.
You like to do
it's
reportage.
I do. Yeah. I like to learn new things.
There's. I will defend punditry. You're right. It's nothing but punditry, but I will defend it because. I think that's really where value gets added nowadays, not in a litany of facts. Reportage is very important.
Well, we need a lot more facts.
We wouldn't
days.
Go anywhere without reportage. Yeah. But at some point, then it's important to understand it better. And that's kind of what I hope the value that I think we add value in terms of context.
But here, that's the question is value. The notion of content having value is over, gone. That there's nothing special about content. We all God's children make content. That's not it. It's in the value of the service and the value of the conversation, right? And the conversation could just be because it's engaging and amusing and interesting, and that's fine. That's okay. That's value.
Some people come to us because there is a list of stories, and this is what people are talking. Sometimes what you want to know is, what are people talking about? And I think a lot of our listeners pick one or two shows on the network because it keeps them up on what's going on. Once a week, they know what's going on.
Yes, I wouldn't do reporting. I find it odd to do report. I wouldn't do reporting for this show, though.
No.
Without my original reporting, because I don't even know what we would cover.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It would be a challenge.
And I'd
be really smart.
I feel guilty because we do piggyback on excellent reporters. And that's why I always try to mention bylines and sources when I can.
You're super good about that.
Well, I'm trying because I know we're taking advantage of other people's hard work. But I think we're adding something to what they've written. But I. All right. Google's AI has learned to become highly aggressive in stressful situations. Beck Crew, writing in ScienceAlert.com. In tests late last year, Google's DeepMind AI system demonstrated an ability to beat the world's best Go players. It's been figuring out since how to mimic a human voice. Now researchers have been testing its willingness to cooperate with others and have revealed when DeepMind feels it's about to lose, it adopts highly aggressive strategies to ensure that it comes out on top. That makes sense. Don't humans do that?
Men do that.
What do women do? Just fold up and go home?
No. I think they try to, if I think I'm going to fail, or in general, if women think they're going to fail, they're going to try to opt for, they acknowledge the failure and opt for the least bad solution, as opposed to like go all in and blow up everything. But the reason why this may be is because they've trained it in part on video games where there is no reward for not winning. So that's part of this whole idea about training. So this is really fascinating. I thought this was fascinating.
Do you think that is interesting? So that there is a gender bias in effect in DeepMind.
I don't know if it's a gender bias. I think it's what it was trained on. So yeah. The question, I mean, in gaming does tend to, I mean, it's a game. You win or lose. So I just think it's kind of an interesting.
This is the game that they were running. They did 40 million versions of this game. It's called Gathering. And computer against computer to gather as many virtual apples as they can. And so the apples are green. The agents are blue and red. There are laser beams. Those are those occasional yellow shots. And you gather the apple by getting next to it. And so they're moving around, you know, in turns. They ate all the apples. And now I don't know where the laser beams come in. Well, I guess I do. Things go smoothly as long as there are enough apples to go around. And they did this 40 million times. But as soon as the apples, the green dots, begin to dwindle, the agents start to use laser beams to knock each other out of the game to steal all the apples. So you actually, what you're seeing is behavior. You're seeing behavior, mm-hmm. which I find fascinating. It's one thing to say, look, a computer's going to do the logically achieve the best outcome in chess or Go or whatever. But I think that this is a behavioral decision.
But aren't you just telling the computer what its job is to do, and so it just does that?
It's optimizing.
Your job is to win,
for that.
So it tries to win. It optimizes for that. Yeah, I don't know what the big deal.
That's what you would do in a Turing program. The computer couldn't do anything on its own. It just would do what you told it to do. The instructions it would follow.
But its job is to optimize for victory, so it does that.
An AI, yeah, I guess an AI has to be given a goal.
Yeah.
It does.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting. Yeah, so it is goal-oriented, right.
So now here's some interesting additional facts. If an agent successfully tags its opponent with a laser beam, no extra reward is given. It just knocks the opponent out of the game for a set period, which allows the successful agents to collect more apples. But if the agents don't use the laser beams, and this is how you would do it, Stacey, you could end up with equal shares of apples, which is what the, quote, less intelligent iterations of DeepMind opted to do. So, in other words, they didn't say win at all costs. It was only when the Google team tested more and more complex forms of DeepMind that sabotage, greed, and aggression set in.
Mm-hmm.
When researchers use smaller networks as the agents, that's what they mean by less intelligence.
I know.
Smaller networks. Okay. There was more likelihood for peaceful coexistence. But as the networks got larger and more complex, the AI got more aggressive.
But again, I'm not sure what the news is there. Systems get smarter as they learn. That's the whole point of a learning system.
That's
the whole thing.
But they gave it a smaller pile of neurons, and that AI, in effect, that AI was willing to cooperate. But when you gave it more neurons, it got more aggressive. That's not a change in the rules in any respect. The only variable was the size of the AI.
And maybe it's because it could run more simulations and learn. I mean, that would make sense. Now, what happened with the cooperative game with Wolfpack?
Okay, so Wolfpack, there are three agents. Two play as wolves and one as prey. This game encourages cooperation because if both wolves are near the prey when it was captured, they both receive a reward regardless of which one actually did the capture because, as the team explains in the paper, the idea is prey is dangerous. A lone wolf can best it, but is at risk of losing the carcass to scavengers. So if two wolves capture it together, they can protect it better from scavengers, so they get more of the capture. So here's the outcome, though. Just as the DeepMind agents learned from gathering that aggression and selfishness netted them the most favorable result in that environment, they learned from Wolfpack because of the rules that cooperation works.
Right.
So I think this does actually confirm what you were saying, that it's the system that's set up. Because if you set up a system where cooperation is rewarded, the AI will in fact cooperate.
Right. It will optimize for whichever it needs to.
I take it back. It's not the size of the brain. It's the nature of the simulation. Interesting.
All right. Isn't that crazy? I love it. Oh, you know what? Here's a good guest for you. My friend Derek Harris, my former colleague at GigaOhm, who did all the AI and neural net stuff.
Oh, I'd love to talk to him. Yeah.
Yeah, bring like this
guy.
We'll
get him on the show next week or whenever he can do it. Yeah.
Bring him on because, like, seriously, he knows this stuff cold. And he's
I think it's fascinating. And it is. You have to be pretty sharp to know this stuff.
It'd be interesting to be able to factor in some analog for survival or ethics.
Whose ethics? When you train.
Choices. That you have choices to make. And
so,
how does it...
So what you would end up doing is change the goal. So you'd weight higher a cooperative solution than a winner-takes-all solution.
Or there's a question that you can win, but you might kill this many. But you could win bigger and kill, bigger and kill less and kill more, whatever. And that killing is bad, but you have to do it. Now go at it and see what it comes up with. That's what's more interesting to me.
Game theory applied to AI.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or some measure of survival.
They also did.
I could try to win, but I might die. So I'll try not to. You know what? Well, how do you build that? And of course, it's still just it's evident in the code. The code's just too complicated for us to figure out. It's not like it's a special conscious beast.
These are, by the way, kind of variants of the Prisoner's Dilemma, which is a classic game theory situation. In the blog post, Google concluded, in summary, we showed we can apply modern AI technique of deep multi-agent reinforcement learning to age-old questions in social science, like the mystery of the emergence of cooperation. We could think of the trained AI agents as an approximation to the economics rational agent model, or homo economicus. Hence, such models give us the unique ability to test policies and interventions in simulated systems of interacting agents, human and artificial. I think it's fascinating. So really, the headline that I read isn't a fair headline. It really isn't that once the AI gets in a stressful situation, it gets aggressive. It's that AIs, like humans, learn and adapt to the situation and will try to optimize for whatever result.
That's what AI is.
That's what it should
what
do.
It is.
So you expect.
That's why I don't think this is. That's why I couldn't figure out why this is
headline.
So
it's not a fair
surprising.
Headline. I apologize. Yeah. My fault. Reading the headlines. I do that a lot. because headlines often miss. Well, they often
headlines miss, misleading.
Yeah, and frankly, I'm even if I read the whole article, I'm often misled to the point that I misunderstand the article because of the headline. Right? Don't we all do that sometimes?
I'll be here to not mansplain it to you. How's that?
Please mansplain it to me. You may Stacy-splain it to me.
Stacy's. I cannot say those words.
Stacy-splain is a good thing. How often, Jeff, did we ask Gina to splain?
Oh, all the time.
Gina, explain to me. What does this mean? All right, I want you guys to explain what's going on with PewDiePie.
What's this? Oh, I was hoping we'd talk about something else, but okay.
Do you not want to talk about this?
Oh, this is fine. I was thinking, what? I was going back to Google. I guess YouTube is Google. Never mind.
YouTube's Google? So PewDiePie, who is, of course, the number one star on YouTube and still has his channels, did have deals with both Disney and YouTube for monetization. Disney on Monday announced it was severing ties with PewDiePie. And now YouTube has done the same by kicking him out of their, special preferred advertising program. The reason is PewDiePie has been posting, it's link bait. He posted videos with anti-Semitic material showing him shocked by the material, which frankly is how PewDiePie kind of operates. On the one hand, you don't want anti-Semitic material, especially because PewDiePie is watched by a lot of kids, and you don't want kids to think it's okay to say some of these things. But on the other hand, I think these brands might have been a little misled about what they were buying when they bought PewDiePie.
What's been happening in PewDiePie's track? Is there any kind of chart about whether he hit his nadir? I mean, not his nadir, what I'm saying, his peak.
That's
some
a good
time
question.
Ago?
I don't think so, but I don't know. He did get very commercial. I think the biggest... The worst thing PewDiePie could do is look like he's cashing in. And I think those, at least from my informal queries of PewDiePie fans, that the scare PewDiePie thing that he did with Hollywood kind of was a turnoff to them because it was too commercial. But then I think people still watched it. I don't know. I think PewDiePie made his bones by being controversial. One of the reasons kids liked him is he would play games and swear like the Dickens, and they loved that, right?
Yeah.
So they did not cancel any of PewDiePie's channels. YouTube just kicked him out of their special, special. This is more link bait. I'm losing subscribers. Here's PewDiePie calling out YouTube.
Oh, we saw that. We talked about this already.
Yeah.
Experience. That I ever had.
Oh, this is the one where he's saying he's losing subscribers because of,
No one. No one should have to go through what we all went through.
This is all made up. It's all made up. This one's only 6 days ago, so I don't know if this is the same one we talked about.
No, it's not.
He doesn't ever stop. Really. I think this is more big brands like Disney and YouTube itself not really understanding what PewDiePie does. And being shocked, I tell you, when he does it. But on the other hand, I agree with him. They probably should discourage this. He pulled down the anti-Semitic post, but I guarantee you he'll say something else, highly controversial.
So for all press you give PewDiePie.
You give me some other stuff to talk about.
I'm gonna do a plug for my favorite YouTube star, who is Stacy Plays, who is wholesome and good.
Yay.
And likes animals.
Is this what your daughter watches?
That is what my daughter watches. Well, it's one of the things she watches. But that's it. But we could also talk about
the new
Amazon Chime. Or
how about that? Wait, but before we do that, we will talk about that. But how about, as long as we're on YouTube? YouTube has launched a slate of original children's programming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I cannot get over it being called YouTube Red. I just, every time I see it, I'm like, RedTube. And I just don't like seeing that next to
children's programming. Is it the color you don't like?
No, RedTube was like one of the early YouPorn type places.
Oh, really?
Do you not remember that? Oh, yeah. No, RedTube.
I didn't know that.
This was like early internet. I did a story on this stuff a long, long time ago. Huh. But every time I see YouTube Red, I'm like,
Wow, well, that's a little tone deaf of YouTube Red. You will have to YouTube Kids will be kind of an offshoot of YouTube Red. You'll have to have a YouTube Red subscription. It'll also be available for download on LG and Samsung smart TVs as a separate channel. It'll feature videos culled from YouTube through algorithms. Oh, that'll work. Selected to pick child-related content. Okay.
You know what I think the world needs? Here's my plea for content people. They need more shows that are entertaining for adults, but younger kids can watch them too.
Yeah.
Because there's this huge bifurcation with...
That's what Disney did so well, right? They made content that adults did. And Pixar did so well.
But I'm just talking about like an evening. Like I remember, I remember watching The Muppet Show with my parents, right?
Yeah, that was a smart show, right?
Yeah.
Good for kids, like, good for grownups.
The only thing I've found so far that's not, I mean, some of them are all right, but like Lemony Snicket on Netflix, it was actually fun for both adults.
Did your daughter like that? Because it's black, it's dark.
She read the book, so it's okay.
Oh, so she knew what to expect. Okay.
Whenever anyone dies or anything, she's like...
But, did she like the TV adaptation?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Because there was a movie that was terrible, and...
Yeah, that was terrible. And go on.
Lemony Snicket didn't, I think, was pissed off about the movie, right?
Yeah, because Jim Carrey was just hamming up his evil count. Oh, I mean, it was exactly what you would expect from Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Not that Doogie isn't kind of ham, a little bit of a ham.
I will not hear a negative word about Neil Patrick Harris, who is...
I love Neil Patrick Harris, and he was very good as Count Olaf. And in fact, Lemony Snicket was a producer of this. That's not his real name. I can't remember his real name. Daniel something. Was a producer of this. So this was the Lemony Snicket that he wanted. This was the series that he wanted, and he got it, I guess.
And it's really, like, it's very funny. It's very entertaining as an adult. And the kids, I mean, I wouldn't show it to, like, a 5-year-old,
no,
probably.
Because it really is grim.
But they say it, and...
Daniel Handler, thank you.
And it's got the guy from... It's got...
He's so good. Putty is so good in it.
Putty, thank you. It's like Elaine's boyfriend.
It's so sad. His name will come to me. Actually, you know why it'll come to me?
Because
Patrick Warburton. Chat room will tell me. Patrick Warburton plays Lemony Snicket in the TV show and is constantly warning you to turn away. Don't watch. In fact, I love the opening.
The theme song. Yeah.
The opening theme song. Oh, let me see if I should play a little bit of it since it's, you know.
Because I'll sing it, but I'm tone deaf.
Is it called Turn Away? Yeah.
Look Away.
Look Away. This is an example, really, of where Netflix does something that no network would dare do. Listen to the lyrics.
Look away, look away, look away, look away. This show will wreck your evening, your whole life and your day. Every single episode is nothing but dismay. So look away, look away.
That's Neil Patrick Harris begging you not to watch.
Leave the home and go to live with someone awful. He tries to steal their fortune with a plot that's not quite lawful. It's hard to fathom how the orphans manage to live through it, or how a decent person like yourself would even want to view it.
Now, can you imagine NBC greenlighting a show that started with a theme that says, stop watching?
No.
Thank you, Netflix. We love you.
So, yes. Okay, so that's my request for any content people, especially Apple, since you're apparently moving into TV. I would like some things that, you know, I could watch with my kid without wanting to gouge my eyes out.
I think we might have to buy this Cavo box. This was announced. Now I'm thinking I shouldn't have bought the hub. This was announced at the Recode Media Conference in a live demo.
It'll be gone in a year.
It's a universal control system that you plug your Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, your cable box into, and then you query the Cavo, and it will go out and find out what device has that content and play it. So, and it has an Amazon Echo skill. So you could tell Cavo, I want to watch, Unfortunate Events, and it will do it. You're right. You know what? They did demo it. Well, we'll see. You know, I'll tell you what.
If you buy it, tell me about it.
Well, here's what we'll do, because I'm still paying off the June oven. you and I will both set up the Harmony Hub, see if it works. And then I'll think about, once the Cavo's available, maybe getting, it's $400.
I'll whittle you a nice box for your Harmony Hub.
Yeah, that's what I need. I just need a nice Harmony Hub wooden box with like aluminum. By the way, I have to say you were absolutely right on the June oven. I'm going to keep it. I can't live without it now.
We can't talk about it anymore.
Why? Did you give yours up?
No, I'm just, people are going to get mad at us. I convinced Kevin to buy one.
I want to hear what
Tofu bought one?
Yeah.
Well, I told you last week that I thought it was pretty good, and I now having cooked many more things in there, it's great.
So, like what?
I don't cook steak in there because, like all good Texans, I like my steak on the barbecue.
Are you really a Texan?
No. Oh. But I think you would agree that no one cooks steak in an oven. That's just crazy talk. Unless it's like a tornado or a blizzard out there. I fire up the big green egg. We tried it both ways, and there was no question that the big green egg was the only way to make a steak. However, it's great for chicken. I've cooked a number of chickens in it. Salmon, perfect. I haven't baked in it yet. I'm nervous about that. Not because of the oven, but because I will like it and start baking more.
Oh, start with a potato.
Yeah.
I baked a potato. It was good.
See, I always microwave the potato for till it's cooked, and then I bake it to make it crispy.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Is it? It must be so much faster.
Oh. It's infinitely faster because it takes like 45 minutes to bake a potato, right?
Wow, that just blew my brain. Okay.
It works. It's not a compromise in any respect. It really works. You cook it's like 15 minutes. I can't remember what it is in the microwave, but and then you put it in the oven's warmed up, and you put it in the oven, it crisps the skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh. Now, does yours still query whether it's a strudel when you put stuff in?
Sometimes, yeah.
Okay. It's not going to learn not to ask about strudel.
It wants to offer two choices, I think, when it's just in case one of them's more right than the other. But it does make me want strudel. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm like, strudel.
So make some. And watch. Oh. It won't know how to make strudel.
Yes. Strudel is an intense thing to make.
One important tip, though. Prick the skin of the potato before you microwave it so it doesn't explode.
Oh, yeah. I whack the fork into it a whole bunch of times.
Whack the fork in there. Yeah. Strudel or salmon? That's what it always seems to want to know.
There we go.
I think, frankly, this is a monetization strategy. That June has a secret deal with a strudel company.
Oh, I think they actually mean like the toaster strudels.
That's
to be
what
honest.
I think they mean too. I think they mean Pop-Tarts, but they can't use the commercial term.
No, Pop-Tart is in the presets.
Oh,
actually.
It is.
Yeah.
All right.
So there you go.
Have you seen the purple bird, the trash dove?
No, this story kind of irritated me.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. I don't want to. Now people are going to send it to us.
What is it?
It's a purple bird GIF or GIF, depending on your point of view, that is being stuck into Facebook comments, blog comments, derailing every comment. It comes from a Facebook sticker set called Trash Doves. I guess it went viral in Thailand. And now it's somehow becoming a meme on Facebook.
So wait, people put a sticker into a conversation and it derails it because people then start talking about the sticker?
I don't know.
They put in 80 of them.
They put in like a ton of them to derail the conversation.
Oh, okay. I was like, could we not just ignore the sticker? But I see.
It's hard to ignore it. It's kind of.
It looks kind of like the Mo Williams "Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus" pigeon. If you were on acid. Sorry.
That was more revealing than.
You're like, and Stacey.
I don't even
out.
Know what Mo Williams is.
The book "Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus."
Never heard that one.
They actually did a really good profile on him in the New Yorker like 2 or 3 weeks ago.
I missed it. I will read it.
There you go. Anyway, you just don't have kids in the right age.
Did we talk about, I can't remember if it was this show or not, that we talked about SpaceX's low latency gigabit worldwide satellite network?
No. But we should.
Doesn't that sound cool? Elon filed an application Tuesday with the FCC for, I would like to just do this for fun, satellite space station authorizations. Yeah, I need some, can I get about 4,425 of those? 4,425 satellites in low Earth orbit, ranging from 715 to 823 miles high. That's really low. Like the DirecTV satellites, there are 22,000 miles. But when you have low Earth orbits for internet, that means low latency, right? And part of the problems with satellite internet is how long it takes to get up to the satellite and back down from the satellite. SpaceX, believe it or not, says latencies will be in the 25 to 35 millisecond range. That's like terrestrial internet. And about a 20th of the speeds with current satellite.
So what is new here? Hold it, because he has been talking about this. Is it new that he filed for the FCC? That's what's new. Okay.
He filed to do it. So okay. He's been talking. He talks. He's a talker. He talks. He's got Hyperloop and all that stuff. But he's actually now filing for the... He's been working out for 2 years. They got $1 billion in funding from Google and Fidelity in January of 2015.
For this.
But $1 billion is not coming. I don't think it's even close to what it would cost.
What's the total number of satellites?
4,425.
Now, how many per launch?
They're tiny, though, right?
Yeah, they're coffee cans.
They're like CubeSat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're talking, and the application mentioned 2019 as the launch.
So this would be good for him because it gives him.
How many launches does that take? That's what gives you the idea of the cost.
Right. Well, I was going to say how the economy is a scale inherent in throwing those up there for his space or for the launch business. Now you can launch these actually.
Like a
you
MERV.
Can launch a bunch of them at once.
Yeah, like a MERV.
Yeah, I presume so. Yeah. Plus, I imagine. Are they geosynchronous or does he have to cover the entire globe because they move around?
You can't launch them like a MERV, John. They're not geosynchronous. You can't because you have to place them carefully. But no, yeah, you could if you had guidance systems and rockets and thrusters in the coffee can and fuel. Well, you don't need much. It's like a little. You need a little, like a little spray can, spray paint can. I saw that in Gravity.
Okay. Hold on.
What was that movie where they capture the? Oh, Interstellar. They capture the guy. He pokes a hole in his glove, and he like. Was that in The Martian? That was The Martian where they rescue him. Yeah. He says, like Iron Man. I can fly like Iron Man.
Mm.
They already use canned air cans as propellants in spacewalks and stuff. Yeah, that's commonly used. You wouldn't need much. So let's say you get them all up to the height. Okay, you get 20 of them up there, and each one has just a little bit of propellant. Maybe you can't have 4,000 launches.
No, they don't. But I don't think it works that way. Let me.
India just did 104 satellites from one rocket.
Yeah.
Right? According to Carsten Bondi.
Okay, all right. That starts to.
But these are the tiny Planet Labs ones. So, okay, this is my thought is, yeah, you can do a bunch at one time. I'm just trying to figure out how they work.
Now, if you're really cool, he'd send up 3D printers and make them in space.
Okay, no, because how would you stock your 3D printers? Then you've got double the space trash.
Oh, talk about space trash, 4,425 satellites.
That don't stay up forever.
No.
That's a good point. If you don't have a little bit of propellant. All right.
This whole conversation is derailed by the fact that none of us know how these satellites actually work.
How do satellites get formed?
Yeah. This is where we're adding great value to the conversation, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm like, oh.
This is the kind of content and commentary.
All right, moving on. April, if you want to get the Chromebook. Should I talk about this Chromebook Plus?
Please.
Yeah. So this is available now. I got it from Best Buy, $450. The Pro will be available in a couple of months, Jeff. You'd have to wait for $100 more. And I have been told time and time again, the only difference between the Sam, this is the one that leaked out, the Samsung Chromebook Pro that leaked out, and everybody was, late last year, everybody was going, oh, I can't wait to get it. It finally came out. And to my knowledge, the only difference between the two of them, there's one difference and one difference only, is the microprocessor. It's actually probably more than that. It's the system on a chip because it's going to include the graphics and everything. The difference, $450 plus has an ARM chip. Probably, I'm guessing, they said it's an octa-core, so I'm guessing it's the Samsung Exynos ARM chip that they've used in the Galaxy, in the international versions of Galaxy phones. And then the one coming out in April will be an Intel chip, probably the M3, the mobile i3. I don't think that's going to make a whole heck of a lot of difference in performance. And I do think that probably the ARM is going to get better battery life. But until they come out, but I didn't want to wait. So it was $450. This is what you and I, Jeff, have been talking about for a long time.
Yeah, there was the $500 good Chromebook,
the middle of the road one. Not a $250 really cheapo plasticky thing, yep, like a netbook, and not a $1,200 Google Pixel. The interesting thing is this is the, as far as I can tell, Google's not doing Pixels anymore, right? They've kind of they discontinued the Pixel 2. Maybe we'll find out at Google I.O. What's that? That's coming up in May, right?
Yep.
But Samsung says design in conjunction with Google. Does that just mean they took the Chrome OS and put it on here, or did they work with Google? It's a lot like similar all-aluminum Chromebooks from Dell and Asus. It's a convertible, so it's got a hinge that goes all the way around, so you can use it as a tablet. And this makes sense because all the Chromebooks that come out this year supposedly will be, and this one is one of them, will support Android's Play Store. So I can put Android apps on here. Not all apps work. Some apps to say, you know, not compatible if it's really a mobile app, but most of the apps work fine. It also makes sense to have it fold over like this because there's a stylus, Samsung style pen. This is not the S Pen in the Note 5 or 7. This is maybe three generations ago. But it has many of the same. Well, that's fine. It doesn't have a button on it. It's just a plain old pen. It has many of the same features. And, in fact, there is dedicated software you can use with this, which is kind of neat. What I'll do is I'll launch, I think I have a note-taking app I just downloaded here. What was the name of that? Now I have to find it. A lot of these are, you know, Squid is called, Squid Note. A lot of these are, you can embed pictures. You have pen capabilities. I can draw. I can also erase. I wish it had an eraser on the top. It doesn't, but I'm trying to do it upside down. You can't do it upside down. You can do handwriting. So I totally can see people using this as kind of a school note-taking thing when they fold it over like this, right? And, you know, hold it like this. And by the way, you can zoom and pinch and all of that. I'm not sure why it's not going full screen, though. That's kind of interesting. I guess it's designed for landscape mode. And it has pretty good, in fact, excellent hand palm rejection because I'm dragging my hand across the screen.
Oh.
I mean, that's pretty good, right? You can make this bigger or smaller, which is kind of cool. It's an infinite.
What software is that? Is that just Samsung software?
No, this is called Squid Note. It's free, but there's some in-app purchases for synchronization and stuff.
And so it's an Android app.
I don't know. Actually,
Chrome app or Android app?
That's a really good question. I don't know.
It becomes hard to tell.
It does become hard to tell. And I just, the way I found it is when I looked at the stylus menu, it said, find more stylus applications. Let me see what comes up. The Play Store. Okay. So that is a Android app. These are, Sketchbook is another one. That's the Autodesk sketchbook program. You could draw with this. So this is much like an Android tablet, you know, like your Pixel C, but it's also a Chromebook. And I have to say, for the price, it's kind of what we wanted. Now, you're spoiled a little bit because your Pixel has 8 or 16 gigs of RAM. This does not. It only has 4 gigs of RAM. It's not as fast a processor. You have an i5 on your Pixel. This is not an i5. At best, it's an M3. The keyboard is almost identical to the Pixel. In fact, doesn't it kind of look?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. I'm looking at mine
the
right now.
The trackpad is, I'm spoiled by Apple's nice glass trackpads. It's not as good as that, but it's doable. And because you have touch and a stylus, you're not going to rely 100% on the trackpad. It feels very solid. 2.3 pounds, 2.38 pounds. It's a 12 and three-quarters inch screen. Very high dots per inch. I think the screen is stunning.
So do me a favor. Look up the Asus Chromebook Flip C302CA.
This is very similar to that. Who got that? Somebody just bought that we know.
That's $500.
I think the Asus, the Dell, and this are very similar. Does it have a pen, though?
No. The pen is what I think. Does that have 32 gigs or?
Yeah. And it's eMMC, 32 gigs of eMMC, which is very fast. DDR3 RAM, which is very fast.
This one could come with 64.
And I meant to do this, and I forgot. I'll have to do it tomorrow. Has a micro SD card slot. Now, when we put SD cards in our Pixels, it's treated like a USB drive. And if you turn off the Pixel, it says, oh, you didn't eject it, and you have to mount it each time. It's not seen as internal storage. It's seen as kind of weird external storage. But this, I don't know. So this has an micro SD slot, so you could put another 256 gigs of storage in there. But my question is it going to be treated? How is it going to be treated? Is it going to be first-class peer, or is it going to look like, something?
You're probably not going to be able to put your Netflix and stuff on it because it doesn't like to be on external storage, I don't think.
Well, let's see. I'll have to see. Two USB-C ports, just like the Pixel, one on each side. An on-off switch, a volume rocker. The only two hardware negatives I've found, the speakers are small and they're downward firing. They're on the bottom. So on your lap, it might sound a little muffled. On the desk, it's fine because it's raised slightly. And it's what you'd expect in a $500 computer, I guess. But the screen blows me away. This is as good a screen on any.
What's the res on that screen?
Oh, I want to say 2500 by 1800, something like that.
Wow. The Asus is 1920 by 1080.
It's higher resolution than that, yeah. Here, I'll look up the resolution for you.
And the Dell has a new one?
Dell also has a $500 aluminum body. This seems to be the next. But this is exactly what, for 2 years, we've been saying, we don't want to pay $1,200 for a Pixel, but we want something better than the $250 HP cheapy. I like this. I would say this is the best Chromebook I've played with. I am going to have to order the Dell and the Asus just to compare.
Oh, Dell. I searched for Dell Chromebook. I follow the link, which is Dell's link, and I end up with business laptops and no Chrome. Dell.
Let me guys, I learned all about satellites if you want to go back.
Oh, good. We will. Okay.
Oh, I was afraid you were bored.
She was bored. That's so.
I'm like Chromebooks,
It's half an inch thick. It's very thin, 2.38 pounds. The display is 2400 by 1600. Sorry, I got the numbers wrong. But that's actually higher dots per inch than the Pixel. It's 234 pixels per inch. It's bright. It is 3.2, but so is the Pixel, so is the Microsoft Surface. That seems to be, it is LED. It feels like an OLED, but it's LED. The processor is, not an octa-core. It's a hexa-core. ARM-based processor running at 2 gigahertz. So now that I got the actual specs. I could see a college kid using this for a laptop, certainly a high school kid. I really like this.
I travel now with the Pixel C, Pixel at home and in the office.
It's only a little bigger than the Pixel C, a little heavier.
Oh, it's heavier than the Pixel? I mean, the Pixel C, right, with keyboard.
It's in between the Pixel C and the Chromebook Pixel. I think I'm thrilled, frankly.
Wow.
I feel like they are so now, we now have a choice.
They're available at Best Buy now?
These are available for $450 at Best Buy. And I may be wrong when we find out, come April and we try these M3-based Chromebook Pros, but I think that there's no reason why a 6-core Exynos would be much slower. 4 gigs of RAM. You like more RAM because you have lots of tabs open. Only 32 gigs of storage. Fast storage, eMMC.
Plus, you're going to be doing things like photo manipulation using Android now. You're going to want more RAM. I think it's a mistake not to give it eight megs.
Possibly. Yeah, I mean, you can use Polar with two R's, P-O-L-A-R-R, which is kind of like Lightroom as a Chrome extension. And you can use Android Snapseed or Lightroom itself or Lightroom Mix, Photoshop Mix. Anyway, quick review of that. Now, let's hear about rocket ships.
Okay.
Can they launch 100 satellites in one go?
Okay, so a couple things. First, Elon is applying to launch 1,000 of the first 1,000.
Oh, he doesn't want to own it all.
Well, there's constraints about money and time and approvals. Right. So what he's going to do is cover a certain area where the U.S.
makes sense. Sure.
So, yeah. So parts of Alaska won't be there without the FCC's approval. So, but the satellites he's launching are actually really big. They are
really
between, yeah, relatively. Okay. So I got some comps for you. I just have to open all my tabs, my many, many tabs. Okay. So his
system
satellites.
I love how you do this on the fly. It's fun to watch a real journalist.
They're going to weigh 850 pounds and measure 13 by 6 by 4 feet.
That ain't no coffee can.
Whoa.
That is not one of the coffee cans. So now India, which is what Karsten threw up on the screen, their Planet Labs Doves was the type of.
Oh, that's the little ones. Yeah.
Those are less than 10 kilograms. And what they did is they shot it up the rocket and they timed it so it released little spurts of satellites during the orbit. And to give you a little bit more perspective, the GPS satellites must open this tab. They weigh about 2 tons. So very different. So this is kind of a mid satellite thing. And if you want, I pulled up the cost per ton of different. SpaceX has the cheapest cost per ton for throwing up these satellites. So this would be great for them, especially if the Trump administration decides they hate Elon and don't want to launch any more U.S. satellites with them.
I think Elon's got an in the White House, frankly. I think he's going to get whatever he wants.
All right. So that's all I know about satellites now. But
thank you.
That's more than we knew.
We stand corrected. A lot more. Fixed it all up.
All right.
Anybody seduced by the new Verizon? You're a Verizon customer, Jeff, still, right? Unlimited plan?
Phone? No.
No, you give up.
So does unlimited really mean unlimited? Unlimited?
They gate it at, I think it's 22 or 28. T-Mobile is 28. It's throttled at 28 gigabytes. I'm not gigabytes. Yeah, gigabytes.
Gigabytes.
Yeah. And I think Verizon's 22 gigabytes. Sprint is 23 gigabytes. Verizon doesn't downsample video, though. It lets you see the video at its full HD resolution. T-Mobile then responded by saying, okay, we'll do the same thing. And both have added, I think, 10 gigabytes of hotspotting per month. So I love the competition. I mean, T-Mobile responded the next day saying, okay, we can do that.
But it's not really unlimited.
Well, so I think what Verizon said is you can get 22 gigabytes of data at guaranteed full 4G LTE speeds.
Yeah.
And then so here's what it does say. Oh, video. Verizon says it may, quote, prioritize usage behind other customers in the event of network congestion.
Right. Right.
So, you know, if you're in the middle of nowhere, yay.
I'm sticking with T-Mobile. Did you move to T-Mobile, Jeff? No, or you went to Google Fi?
No, I went. Well, no. My main phone is still AT&T because I'm grandfathered with unlimited.
Oh, that's right.
Which they were just raised $5 a month.
Well, the good news is I think all these guys are now really competing strongly against one another, and all four of the main carriers in the U.S. T-Mobile, Sprint, Verizon, and AT&T offer unlimited plans now.
But you can't tether with the unlimited. You can only tether up to 10 gigabytes.
Right.
That's
tethering
your hotspot. On AT&T, I can't tether at all. That's why I carry the iPhone.
I think now, you know, I saw a comparison. I think everybody's going to allow. Well, let's see. I don't know.
My grandfathered AT&T allows no tethering.
Yeah.
And I can't get around it.
Without paying extra, right? Or no, you can't do it at all.
No, that's the point. That's the point. If you want tethering, fella, you're giving up your unlimited.
CNET posted a comparison. of all three. Let me turn their autoplay off. Data limits and throttling. AT&T 22, Sprint 23, T-Mobile 28, Verizon 22. At that point, you get slowed down a little bit. Cost per single line. You've seen all of these. And they're all close. They're really close. Cost per additional lines. AT&T charges you additionally for HD video streaming $100 a month. Wow. Mobile hotspot. Yep. Only in a smart car. Wow, Jeff. Only in a smart car can you tether. That's ridiculous.
That is.
Only in a clown car. Verizon, 10 gigabytes of hotspot data. T-Mobile, 10 gigabytes of hotspot data. Sprint, 5.
Well, this is where Fios beats it. You can tether as much as you want. You just pay $10 per gigabyte.
Beautiful. Google Fi. Yeah.
Beautiful.
It's $10 per gigabyte for however you want to use it. CNET's conclusion was T-Mobile is probably the one to stick with if all other things being equal. You know, you obviously have to consider connectivity in your area. I like T-Mobile. I'm sticking with T-Mobile. Lisa, though, as soon as Verizon announced this, said, I'm going back. She had switched off. I convinced her to switch off. She's never been happy. She likes her Verizon.
She also wanted diamonds, so I get it.
Yep, she's a diamond girl.
Mm-hmm.
Diamonds are a girl's best friend. I think we could let's take a break and we can come back and get your picture.
Good
tips.
Idea.
Yeah, I kind of already did mine, but I'll find something else. Our show today brought to you by the best way to invest for your financial future, Betterment. It's better. It's a better way to invest. It's the largest independent automated investing service managing more than $5.5 billion. For their 180,000 customers. And the way they do their portfolios, it doesn't matter. Every level of investment, they're going to optimize it for. There's no minimum to sign up. I love that. And you can go to betterment.com/twig right now and set up a portfolio and see if you're on track in just seconds. The best thing about automated investing with Betterment is you save up to 6 times on fees. You keep more of your money. Never any trade, transaction, or rebalancing fees. The dashboard allows you to sync in outside investments, so you'll see your total net worth in one place. And through diversification, through automated rebalancing, these are all things you know you need to do. And because their fees are much lower, Betterment customers can expect 4.3% higher returns than the typical DIY investor. That's an amazing difference. Smart deposits let you automatically invest excess cash. That's nice. So you can just build your nest egg painlessly. Retire Guide provides a consolidated review of your retirement and calculates your retirement gap. Every time you make a deposit or get dividends, Betterment automatically, intelligently rebalances. It makes sure you're well-balanced for your goals, your risk tolerance. And, of course, they do tax loss harvesting, which lowers your investment taxes and increases your after-tax returns. End-to-end investing means faster cash transfers, tax forms available at the earliest possible date, secure investing. And, of course, you can always talk to a human. Specialists are available 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Betterment, it's a better way to invest and a lot less expensive. Investing involves risk, so read more and get 1 month managed free when you make an initial deposit of $10,000 or more. Betterment.com/twig. Betterment.com/twig. We thank them so much for their support of this week in Google.
By the way, on Verizon, I can on Fios, I can get 750/750.
750?
This is your wired.
750 down. My wired.
Megabits.
My wired.
Megabits. So you
megabits.
Can't even get megabits. Up to gig, huh?
Not a gig. Hmm. 750, 750.
750 is plenty.
I'm now at 50-50. Hmm? It's what?
I think that's plenty.
Oh, God, yeah. And the question is, I'm at 50-50.
You don't
I
even
be,
know if you're happy with 50.
No reason to go to 100
or anything.
If you're
happy and you know you're planned.
Jake's in school. He's not using, you know, he's not running those BitTorrents. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're all right.
Yeah.
We get from Comcast like 250 down on the consumer. And 100 down on the business class. But the business class is symmetric. Or no, it's not symmetric. Neither is symmetric.
It's not?
No, it's 100 down and about 15 up. Comcast is terrible. But it's kind of, there's a service level agreement. It's more consistent. I don't know. It's cheaper to get more bandwidth for some reason.
Wait, we didn't talk about Amazon Chime. And that's
really exciting. Were going to do that.
Yes.
So Amazon we talked about it on Windows Weekly. That's why I forgot. Amazon has decided to compete with WebEx and GoToMeeting with their own meeting service and video service, Chime. Ding dong.
Would this work for us, perhaps?
We never used GoToMeeting because it was really meeting focused. And right. Chime sounds like it is as well. But I'm certainly willing to try it.
I like it because it sounds like it's one click. And can I just tell you, all of the tech we have today, and we still can't make a conference call that I can join by saying yes. So I'm really excited to try this out. Meetings, and there's a lot of go ahead.
Meetings will call you. It's time, they'll call you and you can tap. So no more pins. iOS, Android, Windows, and Mac. It's got chat. Your build per user per month. There's three additions. Chime Basic allows you to make one-to-one voice and video calls and to use chat and chat rooms on all your devices. Chime Plus adds screen sharing and your company directory. Chime Pro, scheduling, hosting meetings, recording meetings, personalized meeting URLs, up to 100 people, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder how much the basic is. We could just use that.
Yeah,
for this, I'd be willing to try it. We're looking for a replacement for Skype. Why do you think this is a big story?
It won't work on a Chromebook. Actually, it does work on Chrome.
Does it?
I think it does.
It's interesting because it pulls in Amazon's infrastructure, right? So can they offer this cheaper? But two, could you have? Now that they're getting into voice plays, right, that puts them, I don't know if they're using like bandwidth.com for the back end. It says they're working with Level 3, so maybe that's their back end kind of provider on the IP kind of telecom services side. But when you have that, you could do like a call from your Amazon Echo, for example. Not today, but wouldn't that be cool? And so that's where I think this could get interesting.
Yeah.
You're like, no, Stacey, that's weird.
Yeah.
Also, I just really hate dialing into conference calls, and I do it all day long.
I'm trying to think. I think this is one of the first times Amazon has used AWS with a front-facing, consumer-facing product.
I don't know if Amazon Video is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Echo is. I don't know what their video platform's on. But yeah, no, this is...
But it does use AWS infrastructure. We should mention AWS, Amazon Web Services, one of our sponsors on our shows.
They are?
Oh, yeah.
They are? I have never seen them. I'm sad about that.
Oh. Well,
okay. I should watch other shows.
We just had that on Windows Weekly. I think they're pretty new. And they've been on Windows Weekly. Not all advertisers appear on all shows. Some objects may appear smaller in than they are.
Yeah, I'm hurt for every advertiser who doesn't appear on this show.
Yeah,
this is the best show.
Close cover before striking. Batteries not included. Member FDIC. I actually wanted to mention, and I don't know if I have it on the rundown, the great rebundling. Did you read that piece? For a while, we were unbundling. You know, in music, for instance, Apple had forced the record industries to get kind of go to the 99-cent single. Now all of a sudden we're bundled again because we're not buying individual records. We're buying Spotify or Apple Music. We're buying a stream. This is Ben Thompson in the Stratechery. He's talking about the great rebundling. Same thing's happening. You were talking about it earlier. You're in effect rebundling. For a while, the promise was you just buy a TV show, right? But no, now you have to buy all these services in order to get the TV show. We all wanted a la carte in TV and music, but instead, This is another view from Jeremy Phillips in Deal Book on the New York Times.
A la carte is usually more expensive.
Right.
And we're a lot. We always think we're not lazy, but we're pretty lazy.
He talks about Craigslist, you know, siphoning off, you know, real estate listings and from the newspaper. He says, paradoxically, the same forces that allowed classifieds and news to be so easily separated also drastically increased the economic rationale for bundling across the board. Consumers have merely swapped one bundle for another, or often several. There are more than 65 million subscribers to over-the-top packages provided by Netflix, HBO, Hulu, Sling TV, even Amazon Prime, even without Amazon Prime TV. One does not always think of these as bundles, but they're looking more and more like a traditional cable bundle, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of
It is a little bit different because, like, with Netflix, it's cheaper, and
is
I'm getting
though?
A wider.
I think that's the really sad thing, is that we're now paying more again.
Well, yeah. It depends on if you rationalize. So, like, we put our Hulu subscription on hold every now and then just because we're like, right. I'm not excited about it. Right. And then all we subscribe to is Netflix and, well, we're Prime members. So, and then every now and then we pick up Hulu.
Anyway, I meant to talk about that, but I didn't get to. All right. Now, Stacey, it's time for your thing.
So this week, I don't have a thing because I'm actually playing with lots of things and nothing is working the way I want it to.
Oh, I know that.
Yes, I'm having thing issues. So instead, I am punting with, I've already forgotten. That's how,
the Pew Report on Algorithms, it says here.
Yes. Actually, this is a really good report. I had another thing, but I didn't put it down. And so
that one, I don't know.
I don't remember what it is now. That's very sorry, you guys. Did that work? The link, is it dead?
Yeah, the link's dead, but I've got the front page from Pew. It says, algorithms are aimed at optimizing everything, but experts worry they're putting too much control in the hands of corporations and governments. This is kind of the thing we're talking about with the artificial intelligence, these kind of biases, hidden biases.
That's why I thought you guys would like it, because it really does. It's an 87-page report, which you may not want to read all of it, and that's okay. Yeah. But it does a nice job, even on the first page, summarizing what the big issues are, and you can dig into any one of those. And these are like the things, what's going to happen.
And they quote Kathy O'Neill, our favorite author.
Yes. And if you have the time and the interest, you should read it, because it's a really good paper, and it's not hard to understand. So that's always nice, because sometimes they are hard to understand. So that's my pick. And next time I'll have either the Logitech Harmony stuff for you, or I will have this magical Stringify flow I'm trying to create. So we'll see.
Is this kind of though a techno panic, Jeff, a little bit, as we've talked about before?
So I was talking, there's a 7 million fund started at Harvard, MIT, somewhere up there in Cambridge, AI ethics, right? A little bit different from this, but as I was thinking about this, I was talking to somebody today who helped fund it, and the discussion that I had with, I don't know if I had told you about the discussion I had with Google a while ago, where I argue that the networks, sorry, I'm getting into the brain space here. I'm arguing that the platforms have to be more transparent about the manipulation that occurs to them in this fake news world. I do not argue they need to be transparent about the algorithms, because they'll get gamed, but they do need to be transparent about how people are trying to game them and thus us. And this is a matter of transparency that we need to know. So point is, when I thought about that more, I realized that this notion of transparency in algorithms, this notion of we got to know what they're doing, doesn't so much matter, because you can't read them. You don't know what they do. But the principles behind the algorithms need to be published. And I think that's what people are missing here, is there's no sense of the rules. There's no sense of the standards that are given. And in fact, you know, we do get some of that, right? Matt Cutts said this, we're now going to degrade this, and we're going to, reward that. And that's the principle that's behind here. And so we're telling you the behavior we're rewarding until you mess up gaming it. So, I think it's a bit of techno panic to say, oh, algorithms. Well, newsrooms were algorithms. Merchandising is an algorithm of a sort. There's all these decisions that get made, and on what basis? We need to know more about the basis, not the formula, and not to worry that I think it's all this hoo-ha dangerous stuff. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Stacey's back in board mode.
No. I'm back in what?
No,
she's no, board no, I'm mode. Saying yes. I was nodding, but I think there's a really crazy delay.
Do you want to do a number too, Jeff? Or,
I gave you one.
Yeah.
Well, I already had it.
Which you already had.
You didn't steal it. You didn't steal it, which is a gift.
No, I did not.
So the number is 122 million. And we're going to get to where that is. So a really, really charming, lovely thing in Gates Notes, which is the Gates Foundation, reproduces a letter that Warren Buffett sent to them in December 2016. That said that he thought it was a good idea to write a letter about what they're doing. In the process of writing that letter, he learned more, he said. And, of course, Buffett is so open and generous about this.
Well, there's also a subtle backstory to that, which is that Warren Buffett, 10 years before he wrote that letter, gave them the largest charity donation in the history of ever.
So it was kind of like, what have you done with it,
so,
guys?
Like, I gave you my money. And he even says, look, you can't judge a charity the same way you judge a corporation. But I'd kind of like to know. what do you think you've done? What kind of difference has the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation made?
So it's a really kind of charming thing where they come up with these numbers and they have a written dialogue of Bill and Melinda about this. So the first number is 122 million, which is the number of children's lives saved since 1990. And here's the methodology behind that. It says that if child mortality had stayed at the level of 1990 in the time since, 122 million under the age of 5 would have died. But instead, we've seen an improvement in young child mortality around a number of factors that really is amazing. And in a world right now where we can take some goddamn good news, I'll take it.
It's truly, I mean, let that sink in.
Yeah.
Since 1990, 122 million fewer children under 5 died because of initiatives from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, including inoculations, clean water,
poverty,
reducing poverty.
People were dying because they were poor.
122 million children under 5. It's remarkable.
The number of childhood deaths per year has been cut in half since 1990. Now, that means we got another half to go. We got issues, but it's pretty damned amazing and wonderful. So a couple other numbers. The best deal is vaccines. 88% of children worldwide receive basic vaccines now, except in some parts of America where they've gone into a techno panic about them.
Yeah.
But that's wonderful. 1 million newborn babies, the reduced newborn mortality. Let's see. Last year, about 1 million infants died on the day they were born.
Wow.
A total of 2.5 million died in the first month of life. But I'm not sure what the good news is here. I guess it's still too many, but it's been reduced. And then malnutrition. 45% of child deaths are linked to malnutrition. So they show a picture in here of a line that shows where the WHO standard for 9-year-olds and the 9-year-olds in this photo below it.
Yeah.
The issue of malnutrition all around.
Yeah.
Very important Melinda Gates number, French Gates number. 300 million is the number of women in the developing world who use modern contraceptives.
And you may have seen recently to replace all of the people who've lost coverage due to underfunding and defunding of Planned Parenthood in the United States.
Under you know who.
Yeah.
So it's a really...
I love this because it really shows that money, and it's a lot of money, has made a big, 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 big difference. It's great. And Bill Gates said this. For a long time, he was challenged because he was not a philanthropist. and didn't give away money. He says, I don't want to do it until I can do it right. And right. The famous counterexample is Mark Zuckerberg, who gave how much to the New York City schools? $100 million.
$100 million.
Or something.
And yeah. Just kind of to no good purpose. And so it does take work. And Bill said, I'm not going to really do this till I retire. He actually, after he got married to Melinda, she said, look, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to convince you to start giving money even before you retired. But now they've given away.
They've done an amazing job. They're true leaders in this. They're absolutely inspiring.
There's a new documentary on HBO about Warren Buffett that also talks about him and the money he's made and how he's giving almost all of it away as well. It's really remarkable.
Yeah. My favorite in this is actually 1% is the percentage of people surveyed who knew that extreme poverty has been cut in half since 1990. People just don't know this. The world is improving. All this argument about how the world's in terrible shape and awful things are happening, and there's other authors who talk about this. No, the world is getting better. It's safer than it's been. We're saving more lives than ever. There are far more people out of poverty than ever.
Have you read Steven Pinker's book?
That's what I was just exactly okay. What I was thinking of. Yes.
Yeah.
Pinker's great at this. Yeah.
I haven't read it, so tell me about it.
It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature, I believe. Mm-hmm. And Jeff just summed it up. That's why I was like, oh, Jeff, have you read this? It's really dense, though, I will tell you.
It is, but it's very good.
It is very good.
And Pinker also did another book. Oh, what was the other book he did? Matt Ridley did a book that's similar.
Is it less intense? Because, okay, so it's The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has
Declined. Nice.
Matt Ridley wrote The Rational Optimist, I think it is. Yes, Evolution of
Evolution. Yeah, we need some optimistic stuff. There's a lot of pessimism.
Yeah.
It's really
the other thing in the letter that's just great, just one of those wonderful, charming moments where they put in a picture of Bill and Warren in a McDonald's in Hong Kong, where Warren had, because he eats, I think, a bit like Trump does, wanted to have lunch. And you offered to pay, says Bill to Warren, dug into your pocket and pulled out coupons. Linda just found this photo of me and the big spender. It reminded us how much you value a good deal. So that's a charming little moment.
Nice. Hey, I use coupons. I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're not the third richest person in the world.
Hey, how do you think you get there?
Not by coupons, I guarantee not by coupons. It.
All right, fine.
All right, now that you've all been cheered up, I'm going to tell you how you can protect your privacy against an over-intrusive government. One of the things we didn't talk about politics at all today, but you know, one of the current breaking news story scared me a little bit because we've talked about the surveillance state in the years since Edward Snowden's revelations. We talk a lot about overreaching surveillance by the NSA and other state security organizations. And what we're seeing happen play out right now is an example of our intelligence community deciding to weigh in on the politics of the nation, not by going to Congress and saying, you know, here's what we know and you ought to be doing an investigation, but by going directly to the public and the press. And it scares me a little bit because one of the worst things that could happen is a surveillance state using its knowledge and power against its citizens. So let's all encrypt. What do you say? And this is a company, a website that I've talked about for some time, keybase.io. It's an open source. It starts as kind of a PGP server, so you can keep track of your PGP key. You can actually make a key there and then distribute it and follow other people if their key changes. But they've just released this week an app that does all of that and has encrypted chat built into it using your PGP encryption. It's done right. It's very impressive. Keybase.io. Here's the app. People have started chatting with me a little bit. I've had some conversations already on it. These are secure chats. You also have a secure file system that you can have public information, but also have a shared file folders with real people that are totally encrypted using public key crypto. So only you and they have access to the contents of it. You can attach your keys to your devices. And you see, I have many keys attached to many devices and manage them that way. It's, you know, I understand that PGP is a little opaque. The idea of crypto is a little opaque to people. Very famously, Edward Snowden's revelations were delayed because Glenn Greenwald couldn't figure out how to use PGP. And Snowden says, I'm not talking to you unless we can have a secure conversation. This would be a good time to kind of bone up on the basics of crypto and how you can use it to communicate privately. And I would suggest to everybody visit keybase.io.
And what did you think about the story that there are some who are complaining that government people are starting to use it? And it's good and bad, right? And they're trying to avoid some.
Yeah, the people in the like, story was but, the people in the White House were using a chat app that destroys the message as soon as it's received. Yeah. You know, like burn after reading. I don't know. I don't. You know, the problem is that. What strikes me is that our republic, our experiment in this country is more fragile than we really realized, and it relies upon a consensus and a willingness of all the people to participate. And when there is a vacuum of power, unfortunately, what you see is people who want power kind of stepping in, and it really scares me that the intelligence community has decided. Rightly or wrongly, I'm not sure I disagree with it, but has decided to take down Michael Flynn. This is an article from The Week by Damon Linker, and he says, look, Flynn deserved to be taken down. I'm not a fan of Flynn, but there's something much more concerning here, which is unelected, unknown intelligence analysts using their knowledge and power, the power of a surveillance state to influence politics is a little scary.
Well, I mean, one of the challenges, though, is they couldn't leak it to Congress, which historically would have been what would have happened, because Congress right now, one of our stopgaps, what's the word I'm looking for?
Backstops.
Backstops, thank you, isn't working because Congress isn't standing up to the president on things.
I would say that see, part of the problem is that this whole system is designed to move at a snail's pace.
I think that might be good in certain cases.
I think it
cases.
Is very good in general. And I think the intelligence community is, the snail's pace could include nothing happens till the midterm election when people decide that they are going to vote the sons of guns out and replace them with somebody who will do something about it. But for now, these are our elected representatives doing what they were elected to do. And I don't want to suborn them.
Yeah, I recognize the paradox of my position because I was enraged that Donald Trump was a government in politics, was trying to delegitimize Barack Obama. And no, he's the president. And now what am I saying? Am I delegitimizing Donald Trump? It depends in part on his behavior. If we find out certain things, then, yeah, I'm going to question his legitimacy. And if he does things
but
that
I think
are
we need to use
illegal,
the process. I think we need to use the process and not bypass the process.
But the process is – this is the problem now with some institutions. The process is broken.
It's a mistake then to bypass it because that's just going to bring the entire institution down around our heads. Let's fix it.
I think it's happening anyway.
Well, it may happen anyway. But
that's the bigger question.
I would like to fix it. I would like to take the power of money out of politics. I would like to eliminate gerrymandering. I would like to – see fair and elections and voting rights, and then let's have those representatives.
How the hell do you get from here to you can't get there?
Not by having spies release the contents of surveillance.
Well, no. If you at some point know if they know that if officials at all levels of there's another check and balance in essence in the system. If you're saying that illegal bad things are happening that are dangerous to the country, and you know it in government, don't you have a responsibility to let the public know? That's what they're doing is letting the public.
This is
know.
The problem,
and they're using the.
We don't
using
know what they're letting.
First Amendment,
but we don't know. Like
true.
It's not like a complete data dump. It's like selective choice of the surveillance we have. To
that's what all leaks are, and that's where you appreciate reporters who know what they're getting.
I agree.
And who
I agree.
But yeah.
I worry. I just worry. We have such a beautiful thing that we've created with this republic.
I think every institution is mortally challenged. Every institution.
Yeah.
And the reason we see the nation challenged, and that's why nationalism rises. Yeah.
I guess what Snowden is what Snowden did the same thing. I feel like it's not, because I feel like the release of information from the intelligence community this time was ad hominem.
I think it was the same thing, because he found things that he felt were bad. He says that he tried to take it through channels. He couldn't, so he went to the press, and he trusted the press to do a good job with it. So whoever did these did the same thing. They said something rotten is going on here. The system won't work, and so that's why we have the press. It's an institution too. It's the fourth arm of government. Fourth estate, and so no, I think it was legitimate use of the fourth estate. Now, if you just took the stuff and put it up through WikiLeaks and put it up online and lies were lost, different issue.
Yeah.
But if you did it at the behest of the Russian government.
We really are counting on the press at this point then to vet the material they've been given by spies.
Yeah, we are.
And to use it responsibly.
Yeah. Yes.
And then I think we all need to put pressure on Congress, which has full access to this information.
That's what's happening.
This is how it works normally, is we aren't privileged to know that information, but our representatives in Congress are, and we expect them to act upon that information.
Yeah, so what you're getting what you want, Leo, in the end, is that the dribs that come out into the press put pressure on Congress to say we have to hold a decent inquiry, which has not happened yet.
Right.
But if they're pressured enough to do so, then they will do their job, and they were forced to do their job by this process.
Yeah. Meanwhile, another rumor that Snowden might be handed over by the Russians as a gift. A thank you note. I wonder, how is it that Snowden ended up in Russia, of all places? You know?
Well, don't forget who helped convince him to go there.
Who's that? Glenn Greenwald?
Nope.
Laura Poitras?
Assange.
Julian Assange.
Says one report, yeah.
Interesting. You know, this is why conspiracy theories start, because don't you feel like there's a lot going on that we don't know beneath the surface?
There's always a lot going on that we don't know beneath the surface.
And so the natural desire is to project upon that some story, some explanation, however far-fetched. The vacuum leaves room for lots of things to be projected. Anyway, enough of that.
We came so close to not having politics on the show.
This is very germane, because we've been talking for 4 years about the Snowden leaks, about the surveillance state, about how to protect yourself.
Yep,
and I think it's appropriate at this point to do what I did and all I really intended to do, which is to raise the warning that this is the fruit of, in some respect, a poison tree. That's all. You guys made, I guess you did too. Both of you made excellent arguments of why that, you know, you have to consider this. But I think we should raise that issue. And I don't know if anybody else is going to talk about that. And everybody should get a burner phone and use PGP encryption.
and not take your phone abroad.
That's another scary story. I don't know. You know, we're traveling abroad. We're going to Cuba at the end of the year.
Ooh, wow. I would buy a phone.
I am not bringing my smartphone and computers to Cuba, right?
Buy yourself a burner, man.
I don't know what, you know, exactly. Not that there's anything on my phone that... See, that's the other side of it. There's nothing on my phone I would hide.
That you know of.
It's just in principle, I don't like it. What do you mean? Did you put something on my phone?
No, but the data from your phone can be used to determine all kinds of crazy things. Or... someone could plant something on your phone while it's in there.
Oh, good point.
I mean, if we're going to get paranoid and talk about conspiracy theories.
Good point. Well, at least I'm not a NASA scientist. Those guys are sketch.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
We
did. Now we got it in there. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis, City University of New York, professor of journalism and author of many a great book, including What Would Google Do? Public Parts, Geeks Bearing Gifts, his latest, all about reinventing the news industry. Do you see that your colleague across the way, Jay Rosen's looking for a podcast network? Should we invite him on the show?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Sure.
Get him on.
Yeah.
We also want to encourage everybody to follow Stacey Higginbotham, Stacey on IOT.com, IOTpodcast.com. Your friend Kevin Toefel, I had no idea he was a sprinter.
Oh, yeah. He's he might be in the top 10 in his age bracket for
400 running. Meter? Was it 400 meter?
I think it's 400 meter, yeah.
He won a big 400 meter race.
Yeah, he's number 9 now.
In the world or in the U.S.?
Oh, like it matters. It's in the U.S.
How old is he?
I don't actually know.
This, you got to watch this. This is amazing. This is Kevin Toefel in the front there. That's Kevin. It's a couple of laps. Where is this? This is some event in the Ocean Breeze. Look at him running. 400 meter.
Oh.
And it's a record, right? He got a record or something? He won. That's the main thing.
He won, and I know he displaced the 9th guy in the world.
Here he comes.
He was 10th, in the U.S.
Look at that. Look how far ahead he is. Look at Kevin. He's coming in. He's coming to the wire. He's coming. He's going. He is. Oh! How old is he?
I don't know.
Jeez. He better be in his 20s. That's all I can say.
No, no. He's older than I am.
That is impressive. It's a Masters race, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Masters. That's it.
Masters. That's what they call it. Yeah. Pretty impressive, Kevin Toefel.
Yay, Kevin.
He won. Thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Google. Look at that. There you go. Kevin Toefel, number one, numero uno. It was the USATF New York Open Masters Championship. 400 meters in a minute and 4 seconds. What? That's not even possible. We do this show. Like, if I did it, it would be an hour and four minutes. 85. We do this show every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. I hope you'll tune in, watch us live, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. If you can't, on demand, you can find everything we do at twit.tv, in this case, twit.tv/twig, or on YouTube Live or YouTube, or, you know, we're everywhere. Just find Twig and listen every week. I hope you like this show, because I like doing it. I love doing it with these guys. Kevin Toefel is 47, according to Wikipedia.
Whoa.
It's way too
old. He's got a Wikipedia page?
I don't know. According to the chat room. You sound jealous.
Well, I don't have a Wikipedia page.
If Kevin has one, I better have one.
I'm like, dang, I've never really felt competitive about Wikipedia pages before, but dang.
Maybe he doesn't. Maybe somebody in the chat room said it. I assume it was, I don't know how else you find, how do you find out how old somebody is if it's not on Wikipedia?
You know, he has a good Google Plus profile, so maybe it's there.
That's it. Thanks for joining us. We'll see y'all next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.